Back with you again, wrapping up a very busy week, Friday, October 11th, 2024, on Connecticut Today. We welcome Orange Fire Marshal Jamie Vincent to the show to chat about National Fire Prevention Week. Solomon Schmidt, author of Legal Gladiator, The Life of Alan Dershowitz, stopped by to chat about one of the nation's most polarizing attorneys and media personalities. CBS News reporter Torian Small dropped by with the latest from the White House campaign as he covers GOP vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance. All right, we're heading into the weekend, and we're going to beg you, don't do anything dumb with fire. All right? Just don't do anything easy on the white claws. Don't pour anything into the fire you shouldn't do. And joining us right now is a fire professional to tell you the same thing, albeit with more professional of a tone than I use. Jamie Vincent is the fire marshal in the town of Orange. As we wrap up Fire Prevention Week, Jamie, it's Paul here. Good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Jamie. So, you know, we're getting into that time of the year, right, when everybody, they got the fire pits going in the back now when it's, you know, when it's cold out there. We've got the holidays coming up, and Chris and I always laugh on and off the air about the people deep frying the turkeys and all that. So you folks, you firefighters, professional and volunteer, certainly want to issue some of the do's and don'ts, right?
Absolutely. This is coming into our busy season. We're actually in the middle of Fire Prevention Week.
Mm-hmm.
Fire Prevention Week falls on the week in October that has October 8th in it, which is recognizes the Great Chicago Fire of 1871.
Yeah.
And because there's so much that we need to get out, we actually take the entire month of October to get our message out so we can visit groups like the schools and senior housing. And we send out messages specifically about upcoming holiday safety.
So, I mean, obviously, Jamie, this stuff has been drilled into us for decades now, but you fire professionals, you still have to go out there and basically just remind folks that, hey, don't be cavalier about this. Don't be, you know, don't be flip, because just one small mistake, we could end up with a big problem.
That's absolutely correct. You know, we go out and remind everyone because obviously with everything going on, people tend to forget. If it's not something they deal with every day, no pun intended, goes to the back burner. So we go out and remind them.
What is maybe, Jamie, the one or two things that you guys and gals in fire prevention in the local volunteer and professional and full-time fire departments, what are the one or two things that you see that you still have to remind people about because they just may forget?
So holiday safety, the two biggest things that come to mind are decoration safety, candles. You have to be very careful with candles. A lot of times people like to light them, leave the room, and next thing you know, they're too close to a curtain or an animal, a pet knocks them over. Live Christmas trees, keeping them watered and fresh so that they don't dry out and can't ignite from either the wiring or anything that's close to it.
Yeah.
But the majority of the fires that we see in residential homes, 60% are caused by unattended cooking. So once you turn that appliance on, make sure you stay with it.
Yeah, and Jamie, listen, I know, you know, different strokes for different folks, but it must frustrate you guys, and I can understand why people like it. You mentioned the candles, and you mentioned the live Christmas trees, and I know, like, I live in a high-rise, and, you know, live Christmas trees are not allowed, and I understand people want to, you know, do it that way. So when I used to put up a tree years ago, back when I had a house, you know what I did? I had a fake tree, and I bought the pine spray, right?
Yep.
And I just said, you know, and I'm like, all right, that's close enough, right?
Yeah, you know, I have to be honest with you. The artificial trees, they're getting more and more popular.
Yeah.
I personally prefer a live tree. We have plenty of farms here in Orange where you can pick where you want to go. If you choose to go that route, just make sure that it's a UL listed tree. You don't want to buy the cheap knockoffs where maybe the wiring isn't exactly up to standards to ensure that they're safe.
Kitchen safety. You touched on that, and the guest is Jamie Vincent, Orange Fire Marshal. You know, Jamie, the other night I was watching TV, and I saw a couple of commercials, and within an hour, you know, there was a commercial for a kitchen fire extinguisher, and then there was a commercial for one of these, you know, blankets that you was just, you know, fire suppressing enough that you just, you know, threw it over the flame and it choked out the oxygen. What would you recommend? What are the guys and gals that do this professionally? You know, at one time I did have a small fire extinguisher in a kitchen I had. What do you think is the best thing for kitchen safety?
So, Paul, the biggest thing is if you're going to use a fire extinguisher or have one in your home, you want to have between your appliance and your closest exit so that, God forbid, there's a fire on your stove. You have the opportunity to walk towards your exit, and if you turn around, the fire is too big, you can easily exit the home. Mm-hmm. You don't want it underneath the kitchen counter or on the back of the stove where you have to reach through the fire or get closer to get to the extinguisher versus having a way out. And as far as the blankets go, those things are actually really heavy. We had some of our elderly population ask us questions about that, and to be honest with you, they're pretty heavy, and it's difficult to deploy. So my advice would be stick with the fire extinguisher if you're going to try anything.
Okay.
But more importantly, get out of the house and call 911.
Yeah, and obviously now, Jamie, we have the time change, and I know you folks, you pros who do this, always advocate, you know, it takes a few minutes, but when we do the spring ahead and the fall back, right, change those smoke detector and CO2 detector batteries, right?
Correct. Yeah, that's absolutely right. Anytime you change the clocks in the spring and the fall, we recommend you change your batteries to make sure that they're fresh. It doesn't mean the batteries are dead. You can certainly use them for something else like a TV remote or if you have a game or something, but you want to have your freshest batteries in your detectors. And I know that for the town of Orange, we have a program that if you know, you don't have the ability to get up on a ladder and change them yourselves, if you call our office, we'd rather spend 10 minutes coming out and changing them for you as long as you have the batteries than to come out for a tragedy.
Nice. And I have to finish on this because Chris and I always, you know, we laugh about it. We kid about it because sadly there are stories about this. You know, Jamie, we're getting near Christmas and we're getting near Thanksgiving. And a lot of people say, hey, how about this year if we buy one of those deep fryers and we deep
We've actually seen some people use them inside of businesses.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so luckily we were able to stop that. My biggest advice is if you're going to do it, you know, much like a kitchen appliance, don't leave it unattended.
Yeah.
And make sure you follow the directions with your cooking appliance. Don't put it on your back deck. Don't put it in your garage. It should be a good distance away because if one of those things lights, it's going to turn into quite the spectacular fireball. So
and you should
want to be close.
And the bird can't be frozen, right? That'll cause a spike in the flames, right?
Absolutely. The water and the ice from inside the turkey will actually react with the oil. The oil will boil over, and next thing you know, it's going to hit the burner and light off.
Wow. Fire Prevention Week wrapping up here. Orange Fire Marshal Jamie Vincent. Jamie, take care. Have a good holiday, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Paul. Always a pleasure.
Appreciate it. Jamie Vincent there. Yes. It's Friday, so you know, if I get a chance, almost every Friday, I like to have an author or two on to just ease yourself into the weekend and talk about good books and stuff that I really think is fascinating, and we weave it all in here with the program. Our next guest is the author of 8 books in a series called History Bites. He wrote his first book at the age of 12. I was learning how to tie my shoes at 12. This guy writes a book. Graduated high school at 16. Fox and Friends called him the youngest child historian in America. In addition to running historical tours of England and Scotland, he also hosts the History Bites YouTube channel. He's posted over 150 educational videos and interviews with people like Governor Mike Huckabee, Mike Tyson, Alan Dershowitz, who we're going to talk about in a minute, and Dame Jane Goodall. Talk about a wide breadth of guests. The book, the new book that he has written, is called Legal Gladiator, The Life of Alan Dershowitz. Solomon Schmidt is the guest. Hey, Solomon, it's Paul here, WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Paul. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Jeez, it's not like you have any time to do anything else, man. My God, what are you, like 21 or 22? Seriously?
I am 21 now, and I don't believe, Paul, that when you were 12 years old that that's all you were doing. I don't believe that.
Mike Huckabee, I'm sorry, and my Alan Dershowitz, I guess Huckabee liked the book. You know, Solomon, he's one of these guys that I'll bet you if you got 100 people in a room and said thumbs up, thumbs down, Alan Dershowitz, probably half the room would love him, probably half the room would hate him. And that's why he's one of these guys that has fascinated me over the years. Talk about him.
Yeah, he is an endlessly fascinating man. I mean, when you consider the historic accomplishments he's had, think of this. As a lawyer, he's done around 300 cases, including the Mike Tyson rape appeal, the O.J. Simpson trial, Jeffrey Epstein's 2008 plea deal, President Trump's first impeachment trial, Jim and Tammy Faye Baker's fraud case in the early 90s, the Klaus von Bülow murder trial.
Jeez, I forgot. Oh, my God, the von Bülow case. I forgot about that. Wow.
That's just scratching the surface. And that's only the notorious legal cases. He has done, and this I didn't really know about him until I started researching more into his life, and I was able to include it in Legal Gladiator. Mm-hmm. He has done a huge amount of pro bono work in the 70s, 80s, and now for human rights activists or everyday citizens being oppressed by a tyrannical government. I talked to people who lived under the Ceausescu regime in Romania. Mm-hmm. I talked to Natan Sharansky, who was a human rights activist in the Soviet Union, who was mm-hmm. put into a prison for 10 years, four of those years in solitary confinement. Those are just a couple examples of people who Dershowitz advocated for legally and helped bring to freedom. That's just, quote unquote, his career as a lawyer. Mm. Then he was a Harvard professor for 50 years. He was tenured in 1967 at the age of 27, the youngest professor in the history of Harvard Law School. Over five decades, he taught about 10,000 students, including, name-dropping alert, Ted Cruz, Elena Kagan, Natalie Portman, Jeffrey Toobin, Mike Pompeo, Jamie Raskin, many of whom I interviewed for this book. Mm-hmm. On top of these things, very controversially, like the rest of his career, he has been probably the most prominent activist for Israel on the world stage, advising or knowing almost every Israeli prime minister from Golda Meir to Bibi Netanyahu. He's written about 60 books, sold in 2 million copies in a dozen languages or so. Mm. And he's spoken in person to around 2 million people all throughout the world. That's just the historic side of his. I mean, those are just his historic accomplishments. Not just, of course.
Yeah.
He has this intriguing human story, Paul, which is what drove me on in my research mm-hmm. and trying to answer a couple questions. One was, how does a guy who starts his life as a punk in Brooklyn, a high schooler, a kid who has terrible grades, is horribly behaved in the classroom, fakes his own suicide and things like that.
Yeah.
Mothers in his neighborhood tell their daughters a variation of, don't have anything to do with Avi Dershowitz. Avi was his nickname.
Yeah.
One of them even said, quote, he's a boy with no future. How does that kid end up being one of the greatest, arguably the most iconic lawyer our country's ever seen?
Yeah.
And also secondarily, why does a man who until recently is a member of the Democratic Party and still holds to fundamental liberal principles, pro-separation of church and state, mm-hmm. pro-choice, anti-death penalty, pro-exclusionary rule, pro-environmental policies, reasonable gun control, etc. Why does that man defend Donald Trump, especially knowing that almost everyone in his life, including his wife, kids, brother, most of his closest friends, are vehemently opposed to it? And those are questions I tried to answer in the book.
Either love the guy or can't stand him, but it's not like you won't have an opinion of Legal Gladiator, the life of Alan Dershowitz, author Solomon Schmidt with us for a few more minutes. Solomon, what does Alan Dershowitz think of the final product here, the finished product?
Well, do you know what? What's interesting to me, Paul, is that he didn't ask to read the book before it was published. He didn't read a single word of the book before it went out.
All right.
And that speaks to me volumes about his level of transparency. He has read the book and he told me, not to brag, but he told me that the writing, he thought the writing was great.
Mm-hmm.
And he was surprised at the extent to which I quoted his critics, including Noam Chomsky, who is his probably most vehement intellectual foe. I corresponded with Dr. Chomsky many times over email. He gave some fascinating anecdotes and background to their debates. And I'm so thankful I was able to uncover what I thought was a lost debate between Dershowitz and Chomsky. Get this, 51 years ago, after the Yom Kippur War.
Yeah.
You can hear their younger voices. It was incredible. And I got permission to quote some of that debate. And I also have a picture in the mm-hmm. book of Chomsky and Dershowitz. Dershowitz at 10 years old, Chomsky is to, believed to be about 19 years old, in the back of the photograph, at a Jewish summer camp in the mountains of New York in 1948. They were at the same camp together.
Jeez.
Isn't that crazy?
And the great thing, Solomon, is you know, in the editorial comments that are here on Amazon, you've got people praising this in the center of the political spectrum, on the far right, on the far left, some celebrities here. So I think that's a testament. It must make you feel good as an author to see the breadth of people who, again, may not love or may not hate Alan Dershowitz, but appreciate the effort here. Is he on, would you put him on the Mount Rushmore of all-time American attorneys? Is he a top four guy?
Well, do you know, in to be quite frank with you, I have not studied the lives of Clarence Darrow, Thurgood Marshall, F. Lee Bailey, Edward Bennett Williams. I would say this.
Yeah.
All the factors that I mentioned on our previous segment and what I lay out in the introduction to the book, I say, and I've not studied in depth, but I have studied and learned about a number of historical people through all time. And I say, Alan Dershowitz is to the law what Churchill is to politics, what Ali is to sports, what Shakespeare is to literature, what Einstein is to science. He is arguably the most iconic lawyer in American history. Now, it doesn't mean much coming from me, but when you read his record, it's hard to imagine that there is a record more impressive than it. And just take his representation of presidents in impeachment trials.
Yeah.
A lot of people are aware that he represented Donald Trump. What was fascinating to me was to learn about his connection to Bill Clinton and to learn that he made similar, though some of the technical arguments about the constitutional grounds of impeachment were similar, were different. He made similar arguments regarding applying neutral principles to Democrats and Republicans, as he did when Trump was impeached and when his friend Bill Clinton was impeached. He was there in 1998. Dershowitz was there in 1986 when there was talk of Reagan being impeached for Iran-Contra. Said the same thing then about neutral principles, and made the same type of argument during Watergate in 1973. That's incredible.
Wow. So does he, Solomon, does he see the law, or does he have a grasp of principles that is on a different level? You know, they say great musicians, great painters, they're doing something a lot of other people try and do, but they just have this different perception of how to do it. Is that one thing unique about Alan Dershowitz? Does he perceive all of this and interpret this differently than even some of the greats in this field?
Well, you know, I can't speak for the other greats like Larry Tribe and other folks who have an enormous knowledge of the law, but Dershowitz taught criminal law at Harvard Law School for 50 years. He studied at Yale Law School under some of the most brilliant legal minds of his day, which I write about in the book. And he thinks outside the box. That I think is one of the things that made him a great lawyer. He thinks outside the box. He comes up with questions that others may not think of. And I mean, one of the anecdotes his son Elon told me, and they are very close. Mm-hmm. He told me that when he was growing up, his bedtime story was his father would sit at his bedside and say, "Okay, now a guy's walking down the road and gets hit by a car, but there's this XYZ variable. Who's at fault?" You know, things like that. And that's not apocryphal. So he is immersed in the law. He knows an incredible amount about legal history and he's lived legal history. That's the thing. He hasn't just studied it. Not that it's bad. He's lived it. He's made legal history. When he talks about, we don't want to become like China or the former Soviet Union or the former Romania or any number of countries, he lived it. He knows it. He has represented people who have suffered under regimes, and he talks about the importance of defense attorneys, which some people could take as egotistical. Mm. But when you see what it's like to live in a country without free and independent defense attorneys, it's terrifying. You don't want to live there.
The name of the book, Legal Gladiator, The Life of Alan Dershowitz. The author has joined us for the first part of the hour. Solomon Schmidt, of course. Order it, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever you get your books. Solomon, I have my copy. It's on the desk. I will dive into it. Your PR people sent it to me, and I appreciate the time. Thank you, sir. Have a great day.
Thank you, Paul. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Solomon. Solomon Schmidt, Legal Gladiator, The Life of Alan Dershowitz. Fascinating guy. Joining us right now is Torian Small from CBS News. And I love talking to people who are actually out covering the campaign on the campaign trail to get a good idea or a better glimpse as to what is going on once, you get away from all the screens and the phones. Hey, Torian, it's Paul here at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, good afternoon. I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good. What's it like to be on following a campaign like this? This is one of the few things I haven't done in this business over 40 years. I mean, I've worked on some local campaigns, but what is it like to get out in the country and follow candidates, you know, sometimes on a daily basis? Do you see things that still surprise you that people may not know?
I think this entire election cycle has been surprising. We've been using the term unprecedented so often that that term itself has become pretty dated. But no, I think what's great about being in this position is that I get to talk to so many different voters. And I cover Vance closely, J.D. Vance, the Republican vice presidential nominee, obviously, but just talking to his voters in different towns when we're in different states, probably like two or three different states a day. So getting to take their temperature as we go to these events and talk to, you know, some of his close advisors on the campaign side and compare and contrast what they're seeing, what they're hearing to folks on the ground who are there and supporting him, I think is one of the most interesting parts about my job.
He is a unique candidate, Torian, and all the years I've been following this and I've worked on some campaigns here in Connecticut. I mean, here you have a guy in Ivy League to educate guy who kind of came out of nowhere. A lot of the detractors say he kind of puts a softer face on the MAGA platform. And I mean, here's a guy with a best-selling book, a movie with A-list characters and actors and actresses made about his life. I mean, he's got a pretty good resume going into this. So the appeal just on those, on that level, must be something to people.
And beyond that, he has a Rolodex of allies in Silicon Valley. He went the non-traditional Republican route of going to, like you said, an Ivy League school, but then working as a venture capitalist on the West Coast before he ultimately, not retired, but decided to settle down in the Midwest. I think the appeal from the Trump campaign's position is that he is this Rust Belt representative in these crucial, what was formerly known as blue wall states like Wisconsin or Michigan. They feel it's invaluable to have someone from the Midwest speak on behalf of the campaign for them.
Yeah, Torian Small is the guest, CBS News, on the road following the campaigns, in particular the Trump campaign. You know, Torian, and I know you were, let me see, this is in Mesa, Arizona. I'm looking at some video you posted there. You know, Torian, I've done hockey and basketball play-by-play on and off for 10 years, and I always found that when we went on or when I went on a road trip with a team, you know, and it was to the Midwest or the South, like I had to remind myself, geez, there's another country out here. And I know people can say that in a map, but I would imagine you sit there and you say, hey, these are kind of people that unless you're covering a campaign, like a lot of America doesn't interact with each other. You know what I mean?
Right. And I mean, especially in Arizona, it's a different type of person or people out there. J.D. Vance had an event outside at the Tucson Speedway, and he cut his rally short because it was so hot. Everyone else there were prepared, and they were like, it's only in the 90s. It's perfectly fine. I was melting. The candidate was melting. It was not pretty.
Torian, finally, what do you make of the reports here now that – you know, Vice President Harris may have peaked a little too soon, and you had former President Obama kind of raise a warning yesterday. And I know you say you talk to the campaign operatives, and everybody I've talked to that's done this say they do that. I know some stuff is on the record, some is on background, but what are you hearing as far as optimism or not from the Trump campaign and or the Harris campaign?
Well, I'll start with the Trump campaign. They are very optimistic about what they're calling the Sun Belt states. So the Arizonas, most of those Western states like Nevada, they think that they got that in the bag. What we're going to see over the next couple of weeks is the focus or attention to those Rust Belt Midwest states like your Wisconsin's, like your Michigan's, and even Pennsylvania, which is why we've seen the vice presidential nominee go there so often. Mm-hmm. I think what the Harris campaign is looking to project over the next couple of weeks is strength in the broad coalition that they're building. They've done over the past couple of weeks, Republicans for Harris are doing one today, in fact, and have brought on some of these notable former Republicans to back her campaign. She's doing better, performing better than Biden was doing. But the question is, has she really galvanized the central part of the base that could come out and support her? She has a really good, strong infrastructure ground game in all of these states that are crucial, but it's a matter of will that inspire folks to come out in November is what we're watching.
And finally, Tori, and you mentioned Nevada, and I guess the wild card there are the unionized workers at all the big casinos, the hotels there, the big food workers there, the entertainment union workers there. They have incredible strength, don't they?
Absolutely. And it's interesting to see in this cycle both sides court the union vote. We've seen Teamsters forego an endorsement for the first time, which is pretty notable. And we've seen, especially in some of that internal polling from these union groups, that rank-and-file members aren't necessarily aligning with union leadership when it comes to who they want to support come November. So it's definitely an effort by both campaigns to either lock in their support there or look to court or peel away support from the other side.
Okay, final question here, and Tori, and I've asked this of all the other CBS people I've had on and some other people. Okay, you're on the campaign trail. What was the one thing you ate on the campaign trail that you said, wow, this is pretty good? Like, I could get used to this. Come on, it's got to be one thing out there, right?
I wish I had a better answer for you. Yeah. I'm on Vance's plane a lot, and we eat a lot of fast food.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a lot of Chick-fil-A.
Oh, there you go.
Of Waffle House.
Hey, you can't get, if you're hungry, those will both do, right? I guess they will.
Exactly.
Torian Small, CBS News. Torian, thanks. Enjoy the campaign ride, and be careful out there. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Torian Small there. There you go. All right.